Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
Let's dive right in.
And we got a big show this week.
We sure do.
Kicking things off.
Yes.
New Channel 9. Somewhere up here in the menu option is Coding for Fun.
Yeah,
so,
I can see it up there.
kudos to Duncan and team.
Yep.
And obviously Clint for doing all the data migration. Daniel Cranahill did a bunch of stuff. But yada, yada, yada.
Bringing Coding for Fun into the Channel 9 family.
Where
it should have always been.
Blogs, articles. I do have an email probably from 2004 where we originally asked Jeff if he could do it, and he said he couldn't.
Oh, really?
He just didn't have the, yeah.
Because a lot of people may not know, you and I actually started the Coding for Fun website.
Yes.
Previous to that, Duncan McKenzie launched Coding for Fun as an article series
in
on MSDN.
Exactly,
and,
right.
And Clint's been carrying the torch ever since, so.
Which brings us to our other announcement, which is Greg Duncan, who we mentioned on the show quite a bit, is actually going to be a contributing blogger to it, so.
No way. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Greg.
That's why I think it's
really
awesome.
Cool.
So I figured you would enjoy. So
that's definitely awesome.
Since Greg always finds cool stuff, it's going to be a perfect match for Coding for Fun.
Greg pretty much writes our show for us, even if he doesn't know that.
Yeah, there's like a handful of people that are just awesome for that kind of stuff.
Definitely.
So kudos to everyone. Definitely check it out. Check out our projects and so forth.
Yep.
Speaking of Coding for Fun, the next thing we have is the Coding for Fun Toolkit.
Right. So this is a set of controls that Clint Ruckus and some of the other contributors to Windows Phone 7 projects on Coding for Fun have really put together that if you're building a Windows Phone 7 app, and I think it's fair to say even if you're not doing a fun application, you may find a lot of these controls useful. So Clint's been an early adopter of Windows Phone 7.
They may not work if they're not fun, but it's
right.
Fine.
That's right. System.fun.
It looks like your app is kind of boring.
Exception. But in any event, he's done a lot of work, and he's found a lot of workarounds to some of the, shall we say, V1 limitations in Windows Phone 7, and a lot of these controls address those, so definitely take a look at those.
Yeah, and there's a great tutorial that we'll include in the show notes for Windows Phone Geek that actually walks you through the controls, and so you get to see them in a GUI fashion, how to use them.
That's right, and he's continuing to rev this over time, so if you have bugs and enhancement requests, I'm sure he'd love it.
Yeah, so add it to the tool set.
Yes.
So speaking of Windows Phone, Rudy Grobler, friend of the show, unlike Steve Marks.
Yeah, unlike Steve Marks, who's an enemy of the show.
ZXing, which is like zebra crossing, is a barcode library.
Mm.
So what that allows you to do is it looks at barcodes and able to read them. Somebody has ported this over to Silverlight, and Rudy walks through how you can use this library for Windows Phone 7.
That's cool. So I can take a picture of my DVD and scan that into my DVD collection application or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
Sell my stuff on eBay, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's actually a decent example.
Cool.
Unlike most of yours. XAML query.
XAML query. So
I think this project is one of those underrated gems that people are going to be like, this is awesome, and I should probably use it.
So I know jQuery, right? jQuery is for querying the HTML on my website. Right?
Yes, exactly
so XAML
right.
Query sounds like it queries the XAML in my Silverlight or WPF app or wherever
yeah.
else I'm using XAML.
That's exactly it.
So can you give me an example of how you might use this?
So there are a couple of API examples, and hopefully people can see on the screen here. But you can actually do a XAML query.search,
mm-hmm.
and you now search for all text boxes, and you can actually do things like dynamically set the value. So I want to, for example, make sure that all controls are now enabled
okay.
or disabled, or I can toggle them. Before, I might have to, you know, do a search for all my controls, or maybe keep a set of controls that I know,
mm-hmm.
and manually say have a toggle method that switches them back and forth. This just makes it very easy when I need to find certain elements, do
mm-hmm.
certain things, run certain animations, maybe insert data, or control things in a whole, so I can control all text boxes, have it have one mouse listener. So anytime somebody does this, make sure to run this function, which is, you know, add a yellow highlight, or
oh,
whatever it happens
I like
to
that.
Be.
Okay, cool. So XAML query. So TPL data flow.
Which is one of the three new DevLab projects that Soma announced on his blog.
Okay, and this one has to do with parallelizations. We'll talk about all three of them at the same time. Ready, go.
That would actually be hilarious. That's the only way to explain it.
Of course.
Done. So here's my high-level attempt at trying to explain this. But TPL allows you to do, it's the task parallel library.
Right.
Includes a bunch of different technologies. This is more the thing to enable data flow from, I am now doing asynchronous programming in one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do I want to do as a developer? Maybe I want to, as one of those things is done, it then goes on to the next queue and starts working on something, processing asynchronously.
Okay, so maybe I'm downloading a bunch of files over here, and then I'm running some operation on those files, and then I'm deleting the files when I'm done, or packaging them up.
That's the example I gave for YouTube, where you're downloading videos, you're converting them to certain formats, and then you're adding them something else. How do you want that to work? So maybe a developer wants, you know, once everything's done, or once one video's done, it can throw it on to the next thing, especially if you're using across multiple machines and that sort of stuff. You can really think about it. It really helps with the data flow. So definitely check that out.
Okay.
Next one is Dryad.
Dryad. I think I killed one of those in Dungeons and Dragons.
I'm pretty sure it was second edition, and I think it's like a horse creature with a bow.
Actually, it is a it's a lion with a horse's head and a horse's tail, and it's a crossbow.
It was overpowered in pools of radiance. if I remember correctly, there was a nerf applied to that.
So, all right. Dryad basically allows me...
These people put their heart and soul into their work, and there we go.
I'm sorry. Basically, Dryad is a programming library for HPC... computers.
That's exactly right. HPC computing, huge data sets, or very computing intensive things like processing a video stream where you may be doing things like, you know, 30 frames per second and I'm just getting pixels of something. So the idea is you can now use Dryad and Dryad Link to do link operations. So for every single internet website, pull to see if it has a webcam stream on it. And then for each of those, pull to see if it uses the color green, or to say search for dryads.
Right, or to say roll 3 million 20-sided die to see if I just threw a saving throw against the dryad who just shot a crossbow at me.
Well, this is why they need to apply the nerf.
Right, I know.
This is why.
I know.
Very huge computational stuff, and the nice thing is, as a .NET developer that's a link that uses link all the time, it's nice to be able to use my same skill set for huge scientific research style projects.
Especially if you have a high performance cluster sitting in the corner of your office going unused.
We're talking to you, Wing Ming.
That's right.
Show. Another one. This one I think is really cool. It's think of it as like a data analysis tool. So MATLAB maybe is the right tool. Maybe that's a oversimplification or generalization.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is you can use IronPython to build a simple application. What you'll see here on the screen is how to compute a word histogram, where it loads up the Declaration of Independence, and it actually builds a graph of what are the most popular words in the Declaration of Independence, which of...
They liked of a lot.
Of was 70, used 75 times. But, you know, this is 10 lines of code to be able to do that. So very powerful tools to sort of do that REPL style where you're executing, try again, do this,
or
do that.
To show me the most popular rolls of my 20-sided die to see if there's maybe an uneven...
Well, actually, that would be a great thing to see, the 20-sided die.
Yeah,
what was the distribution?
It should be even, but if it's like spikes on 17, and that you know,
what
that
state do you think would roll 21? That would be the thing, especially in Vegas.
Question to our readers.
So, RX.
It's really, you know, I'm proud to see them really grow up and graduate. They sure do. So RX, our friends Bart DeSmit and
Eric Meyer,
of course. That's right. I was thinking tie-dye. I couldn't get to his name because I was thinking tie-dye shirt. So RX is now no longer a DevLabs project. It's now an official project. I don't know if there's a name for something that's not a DevLabs project.
Yeah, we just say it graduated from DevLabs, but it has its own data developer center. So obviously RX ships in Windows Phone 7. And there's even a beginner's guide, lots of more beginner style documentation. So I like the fact that they're doing that, because I think a lot of people had that sort of hurdle to get started with RX.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So check this out.
Cool. So .NET 4 coming to Server Core. So if you're familiar with Server Core, it's Windows Server 2008 R2, right? And you can basically configure it in a headless operations mode, which is great for... like server farms where you don't really need a GUI, you just need the most horsepower you can get out of your hardware, for example. And so now, previously .NET 4 didn't work, now with an update that's coming, it will work.
Exactly right, and that's Q1. So Cool stuff.
Yep.
And speaking of infrastructure, Web Farm Framework. So what this is, and we have talked about this before, it's version 2 has now released to the web. Scott Gu, heard of him?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Scott Guthrie goes through a blog post of how to actually use it. So, or the intended uses, right? So I want to provision a web farm, like I need to spin up 10 servers, maybe internally at inside Microsoft where you're not using something like Azure. You want to spin up 10 servers. You want to manage those servers, make sure they have the right permissions and so forth. That's what the Web Farm Framework's for.
That's interesting. I really need to read into this article and understand what it's doing. Like, is this spinning up those servers from the metal? Probably not. It's probably just turning on IIS roles.
Yeah,
on
it's saying. I think it's those sort of things, like set up these the common settings that read write permissions. I think it's that level.
I guess if I had to guess, and I should really
and
read
manage,
the article.
And manage, which is the other thing. So they look the same, right?
So it's probably like MS Deploy, but in parallel across multiple apps, plus the ability to then manage those servers as well. You should really read the article. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, or try and use it. You know, I feel like I get spoiled because all my projects have been on Azure.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's, okay, another instance, sure.
Yep. I'm not paying for
it. Brian's Amex.
Yeah.
Web platform.
Speaking of Scott's and web people.
Scott Hanselman. So talking about, there's so much recently announced on the web platform.
Mm-hmm. Web Matrix. We got, lots of stuff happening around OData, Lightswitch. It's just a whole ton of stuff. Web Farm. Everything.
Web Farm Framework. Exactly right. So so Scott goes through an overview, and this is an hour and 52 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and who doesn't love Scott Hanselman overview?
Probably Steve Marks. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but that's probably. Cool. No, I was watching the Twitter sphere on this webcam, and lots of people really enjoyed it. Said it was entertaining and educational.
Which is edutainment, which is Scott Hanselman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of web matrix, there's these nice things called functions and helpers. Helpers, they're basically, think of them just as reusable. They try and be static libraries, so you're not creating an instance class, and it's just like do this one task, mm-hmm. like twitter.search. It's going to give me data back. Mm-hmm. So this is just a very simple example, where you put them, how you set them up, make sure they're in the add helper, make sure they're in the add function. And there you go. And there's an included example. So a lot of people are asking, like, how would I do this? Mm-hmm. Or I want to release some reusable library.
Like an OData helper for connecting to my whatever website.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. So check this out. All the examples are there.
Yep.
So.
And we've talked about HTML5 and the canvas control that's coming out. So this is easel.js. I'm assuming JS is JavaScript.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes. So... the idea is in a 5-minute video, so mm-hmm. for those of you looking for short and sweet, it goes through how you can build a picture gallery. So you point where your pictures are. It'll dynamically load the background images, and Easel.js does all the work of loading it up in Canvas and stuff. And then they do like a random rotation between 0 and 45 degrees. So it kind of has like a unique look. And then they show how to do the mouse dragging or when you move your mouse so that you can actually scroll through your picture gallery. But it's a much nicer experience than, say, building something, say, in HTML where you're doing some weird CSS stuff. Everything's in Canvas. And Easel.js really takes the work out of it. So if you haven't seen your first Canvas app, watch this 5 minutes.
This sounds really cool. I don't mean for my next comment to take away from this, but I think it is funny how we're not very creative when it comes to creating those first like Hello World apps. This sounds like the Hello World of like for Rio services, it's always a picture gallery, right?
Mm.
Or for like data sets, it's always a Twitter feed now. So anyway.
Yeah, I do think the Twitter has kind of become the file new for anything.
Yeah.
When you're showing data. So look how easy it is to pull Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Now you can hear about what I'm doing.
Now you just need to write the letter T.
Yeah.
Now we will, if you smirk a certain way, we'll pull Twitter. So, Picks of the Week. So my pick of the week, a lot of people were talking about this on the Wall True blog and on Reddit as well. Huge mm-hmm. discussion on what these should be. So these are, what if Visual Studio had achievements? So, the idea there would be, I can't trash that team. Okay, job security, which is written a link query with over 30 lines of code.
Nice. Or the academic written 1,000 lines of F#. but I'm sure it does something really cool. So
the Sword Fighter, 5 consecutive solution rebuilds with 0 code changes.
That's right. So we got an email heads up on this from Weston Hutchins, right? Another friend of the show.
Yes.
And he started saying, well, what if we actually built this thing? So,
well, he pointed out to us, and then we should have gone back and just like, dude, we have to build this. Yeah. So we're actually building a Visual Studio add-in that will do these achievements and does source code analysis and the back-end server so you can see who's hitting those achievements.
That's going to be awesome.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. So stay tuned to that. And if you have ideas, there's some just hilarious ones where my favorite one was on Reddit, I think, and it was called Inception. Have you seen Inception?
Oh, the movie, sure, yeah.
Okay, so it was when you attach a debugger to a Visual Studio instance of a debugger out what's going on. Which I thought was...
That's really good.
Very clever.
That's really good.
So your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week, I just want to call attention to the fact that, you know, at PDC we talked about TFS running on Windows Azure. And we've been doing a lot of work on that, and we're going to be making a preview of that service available this year. What happened recently is Brian Harry actually did an interview with MSDN Radio where he gets into some of the specifics of what it takes to port TFS over to Azure. And it's actually really interesting. I mean, if you take a look at the Azure platform, they were able to port, you know, thousands of lines of T-SQL code and, of course, you know, C-sharp worker processes, if you will, over to Azure in about 2 developer months. Mm-hmm. And it's just really great numbers. There's some interesting things that happen. Like right now, we store all of our blobs when you're running on TFS on premises. We store all of the blobs within your SQL Server database. Well, SQL Azure, you don't want to do that because storing your blobs is actually much more expensive in SQL Azure. But what you can do is you can restructure your data so you're taking your blobs and you're pushing those out to blob storage within Windows Azure, and then it becomes dirt cheap to actually host that
stuff.
So just lots of really interesting stuff, and if you're considering moving an application to Windows Azure, this is an interesting kind of case study to look at. And also, if you're a TFS user or want to be but don't have an on-site administrator that you can use to focus on running the server, then look for TFS as a hosted service coming later this year.
Cool stuff.
Preview coming later this year.
Preview. Love it.
So
that's our show. Thank
all right.
You.
We will see you next week.
Thanks.